We want to welcome you to the statewide conversation. It's with Minnesota state officials on COVID-19, and it's brought to you by the Ampers Network of Radio Stations. I'm Heidi Holton. I am live from the KEXC studios on the windy banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We've got Minnesota Department of Health Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division, Chris Ayersman, joining us. She'll answer your questions that came in this week. If you didn't get a chance to do it, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. This conversation is a collaboration of Ampers Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Chris Ayersman, thanks so much for your time today. Good to talk to you again.
Glad to be with you.
Well, let's start off with a question we had from a listener. They said, Governor Walz expressed hope in our fight against COVID, but he also said we're racing against variants of the virus. So where do you see us right now, and how worried are you and your colleagues?
Well, we are concerned. We are in a race between the vaccine and the variants, and in order to win, we need people to do two things. We need people to continue to follow the mitigation guidance, so masking, social distancing, avoiding large groups, and we need people to get vaccinated when they have the opportunity. We need to get at least 80% of the population vaccinated to have enough coverage to really crush COVID. And so we need both of those things. And right now I'm concerned that people perhaps are not taking this seriously enough, or that people who have the chance to be vaccinated are not taking advantage of that. And as I said, in order for us to really be successful, we need both of those things to happen.
You know, I had heard people weeks ago talking about they were going to wait for this specific vaccine that they wanted. Now, at least in northern Minnesota, there is more availability of it at various sources, clinics and pharmacies and community immunization. But it's still, if you have the chance, you should do it no matter what. Is that right?
Right. And we certainly encourage people to take advantage of the vaccine that they're offered. Now, one thing I've heard is that, you know, some people say, I want to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and I'm waiting for that. And unfortunately, we had a couple of weeks where the Johnson & Johnson, we just didn't get any allocation of that vaccine. But that vaccine is now available, so there is plenty of all three types of vaccines. So if a particular vaccine is your issue, you should be able to get vaccinated. But really, all the vaccines are safe and effective. And so, you know, really we encourage people to just take advantage of whatever vaccine they can get.
Now, the Johnson & Johnson, the reason people are waiting for that is it's one dose. But is the waiting afterwards until you're fully vaccinated longer than the Pfizer or the Moderna?
No, the wait time to be fully protected is the same. It's 2 weeks after you've completed the series, whether the series is a single dose or two doses.
Oh, okay. Great. I wonder if we can talk a little bit about vigilance. You kind of mentioned this right now, to keep up this mitigation, but it can be kind of confusing. And to be kind of personal here, I've been trying to give myself pep talks because, you know, you get, after all this time, I'm a little fearful of things in public, you know, and so I've been kind of talking to myself about what things I can do once it's 2 weeks after my second shot, which I get my second shot on Monday, so that's coming up soon. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that, about how I should be thinking about this, what things can I do differently than I can do right now?
Sure. Well, it's good to, that you're thinking about that two week time frame. Once someone has been vaccinated, there are a number of things that you can do. So you can gather indoors with other fully vaccinated people without wearing a mask. So if you're vaccinated and you have a friend who's also fully vaccinated, you can get together and socialize without masking or distancing. You can get together, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but you can get together indoors with unvaccinated people from one other household. So, for instance, for Easter, if one family's vaccinated and another is not, you could get together without masks with one other unvaccinated household. And the only exception to that is you would not want to do that if there's someone in the household, the unvaccinated household, who's at high risk for serious complications of COVID. And then the other thing is if you've been exposed to someone who has COVID, so if you would normally need to be quarantined, then, you know, you don't have to quarantine, but you should get tested if you have symptoms.
Okay, so it's still, the mitigation is still about kind of the public and that you don't know about people if they've been vaccinated and all of that kind of thing.
Right, so when you're in public, even if you've been vaccinated, you should still wear a mask, you should still socially distance, avoid crowds and poorly ventilated spaces. I mean, the idea is that, one, you don't know who else isn't vaccinated. Even though the vaccines are highly effective, you know, they're not 100%. And so, you know, that's another consideration. So for that reason, we are, and because we don't have, you know, the large proportion of the population vaccinated that we'd like to see, that is why, even though you're fully vaccinated, we still want you to be cautious when you're in public.
Now, I know you talked about this last week, but I think people are confused about what we're hearing about people who have been vaccinated but have gotten COVID. Sometimes it's just they haven't done the wait. It's after their first shot. But sometimes it's been after they have had both shots. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about transmission when it comes to vaccination.
Sure. So I think that one of the confusing things is that, you know, when we've talked about people who are vaccinated, we've talked about how we know that the vaccine protects against clinical symptoms, but we haven't had good information about asymptomatic disease. And we know that, you know, a large 30% of all COVID infections, may be asymptomatic without symptoms. So One of the challenges was that the clinical trials that were used to test the vaccine had clinical symptoms as the outcome. So you were vaccinated and they would look and see if you had clinical symptoms. They weren't testing all the time to look for the potential for asymptomatic disease. So when we've talked about people getting vaccinated, we've only been able to talk about if you have symptoms, that's what it should prevent. We haven't been able to say, yeah, you won't get any asymptomatic disease and you won't be able to spread that. Now, more recently, there have been some really encouraging studies. In fact, one had data from Duluth that found that in the real world, the vaccine has good protection against both symptomatic and asymptomatic disease. So that's really positive, and that tells us that in general, if you have COVID, we're hoping that you won't be spreading asymptomatic COVID to others. However, even with that encouraging guidance, the recommendations are still, as we talked about, that you would mask in public and that you would still take those precautions. So that's kind of one side of vaccinated people and COVID. And while the recommendations have not yet changed, all of the data that is coming is very encouraging. So I'm hoping that with more and more data, eventually we'll be able to make some statements about the vaccine protecting you against both asymptomatic and symptomatic disease. So that's kind of one level. The next level is I've been vaccinated and now I develop COVID. And so first of all, I want to say that when we're talking about breakthrough disease, that means that you have had a complete series and are a full 14 days out. So for instance, if you've had only one dose, like you have, and then you would develop COVID, that would not be considered a breakthrough disease. You weren't fully protected. But if you've had two doses and you're 2 weeks out, and then you happen to develop COVID, that would be considered breakthrough disease. And we, as I've said, we know the vaccines are very effective, highly effective, but even a really good vaccine is not 100% effective. So that means that there will be a limited number of people who may develop COVID. And that's kind of within the range of what we expect. It doesn't mean the vaccine is bad. It just means that can happen. And so certainly that's why we say that if you've been vaccinated and you develop an illness that looks like COVID, we do say you should be tested and make sure that you don't have COVID and it's not a breakthrough case. So I hope that helps to clarify both of those kind of aspects of vaccination and disease.
Yeah. You mentioned testing. Are people getting tested as much as you'd like them to be?
You know, our testing numbers are pretty stable. We are encouraging that people get tested, particularly as we're seeing the increase of variants circulating across the state. And so we certainly, let's just say that we aren't having too much testing.
Okay.
There's always the opportunity for more testing, and we do encourage people, particularly, you know, families and kids in school. We're seeing a lot of transmission in those age groups, so we encourage regular testing, even if you don't have symptoms. We think that is important because it helps us identify cases earlier, and sometimes it helps us identify those asymptomatic cases.
You are listening to this statewide conversation on COVID-19. We're talking with Director of Infectious Disease and Epidemiology from the Minnesota Department of Health, Chris Ayersman. You know, early in the pandemic, or I don't even know on time, but, you know, let's say maybe 6 months ago, we were once in a while hearing about people who had gotten COVID again. How has that been? Have you been getting reports? Have people gotten it more than once in this last year?
Yes. In fact, we have a team that is looking at reinfection from COVID. One thing that we're seeing now is that with the circulation of variants, we are seeing people who are reinfected with a variant.
Okay.
So, yes, that has happened. We know that the protection from, you know, COVID disease does not provide lifelong protection. And so, even if you've had COVID, we say we expect that you'd have at least 90 days of protection. But certainly, you know, you don't want to, just because you've had COVID, you don't want to be too cavalier, particularly with the variant circulating.
Okay. We heard from Kurt in Ely, and he wanted to know about revaccinations, if you think they will be needed and how often. I guess that's a little bit of fortune telling looking into the future, but what do you know so far on this?
Well, you know, we don't know if boosters will be needed. I think it's probably pretty likely. We're continuing to evaluate the duration of protection from the vaccines. That is an ongoing evaluation. I think it's likely that we'll need to be vaccinated, you know, as to have boosters. And I think it would be both to boost immunity, but then also to be able to provide additional protection against newly identified variants. So just like, you know, you do an upgrade to your virus software on your computer, it would be a bit similar to that.
Okay. You know, and I've heard from so many people that, you know, I mean, this has been a terrible and a tough year, and people have struggled with job loss and losing people they love. But they've also been very happy because they didn't get the flu or colds this year. Do you think we'll stick with this, knowing, like, we know how to clean up after ourselves now and not leave germs around, or we know to wear a mask if we have a sniffle when we go to the grocery store?
You know, I would like to think that people will continue to be attentive to these things going forward. But you know, we do see fatigue in following the guidance. So that is certainly, I think you'd have to really, really focus on that. The other thing that we're watching is for some countries like New Zealand, where they have really done a fabulous job of getting COVID under control, they are seeing some of the other infectious diseases, you know, return.
Okay.
And so we'll have to watch for that. But I do think that, yes, we've learned the value of masking and good hand washing and all of those things. And I think if people are willing to continue to do that, for instance, during influenza season, that could make a huge difference.
Yeah. Well, we heard from Jay in St. Paul this week who said, how far after the vaccine could you start feeling side effects? I had my first vaccine on Thursday, and then I started feeling flu-like symptoms, including a low-grade fever, on Monday morning.
Well, generally, we would say that you would have your symptoms a day or so after vaccination. So, you know, if you might feel good the first day, but maybe the second day. I think if you didn't have any symptoms until, you know, several days after your vaccination, and in particularly after your first vaccination, it's less likely that it's due to the vaccine, and it's more likely that it's due to an exposure that may have happened before you got vaccinated. So I would definitely suggest that if you've got symptoms like that, that you should be tested. You know, if it's the day after your vaccination, particularly your second dose, or 2 days after, you know, that can make sense. But yeah, if it's your first dose and it's that many days after, I would suggest getting tested.
Okay. We also heard this week from someone who calls themselves eager but fearful in the Twin Cities. They said, I've had my first shot. I'm scheduled for my second. According to the calendar, I'll be fully vaccinated by the first week in May. And I would like to travel on an airplane to visit my family. But my dad is recovering from major surgery and cancer treatment, and he was only able to receive one dose of the Pfizer before he went under the knife. He is still too frail to get the second dose. Should I go ahead and visit him and my mom, or will I pose a risk to my father?
So what I'd say is that, you know, obviously this individual would be considered fully protected 2 weeks after their last dose of vaccine. And as I just mentioned, we're seeing more and more data that suggests that people who are vaccinated might be protected against asymptomatic disease. CDC is still recommending that people who travel do get tested after travel and mask, and you can check their website. But I would say because of your dad's, you know, very frail status, that you would probably want to consider continuing to mask. The other thing is, I don't know, you know, the distance that you need to travel, because certainly if you can drive, that would be better than taking a plane, just in terms of the potential for exposures. And then the other thing I would say is, I'm assuming that the father's physician made the decision that he should not yet get his second dose, because we are recommending that people undergoing active cancer treatment be considered for vaccination. So that's the other thing, is to see if your dad is able to get his second dose prior to you visiting as well. So I think those are all the considerations that you should be thinking about in that scenario.
Yeah, and it's great that they're thinking about that, you know, because these are dicey times, and you should be thinking of all the little details like that to make sure your loved ones are safe.
Absolutely, yep.
Well, let's move on to another question from a listener. They said, please talk us through the timeline for when you think young kids will be getting vaccinations. First, they must be approved, right? And what are all the steps that still must happen before we're getting shots in kids' arms?
Well, that's actually a really good question. Children's immune systems are different from adults, and so their immune responses can be different at different ages. So, you know, you can't just say, well, here's the vaccine for adults, we'll just give it to kids. So we need to, you know, repeat that research and check these vaccines in children of different ages. So both Pfizer and Moderna have been conducting vaccine trials, including kids down to age 12, and they hope to have results this summer. And just this week, Pfizer announced they didn't submit this to the FDA yet, and it's not peer-reviewed, but Pfizer just announced that their trial in 12 to 15-year-olds showed that the vaccine was 100% effective. So that's wonderful. Johnson & Johnson is planning to also test its vaccine in the adolescent ages, and then they'll expand to infants as well as pregnant women. Both Moderna and Pfizer have started those trials in children 6 months to 11 years of age. So the trials in adolescents are well underway, and they have some data. They're working on the trials for kids 6 months to 11 years of age. The thinking is that the data for that younger age group probably won't be available until 2020. So what has to happen is once those clinical trials are done, then the vaccines need to go through the FDA approval process. But our hope is that there will be a vaccine for adolescents sometime in the fall of 2021, and then one for younger children in 2022.
Okay. Another question that came in this week, they said, I sometimes feel like a year into this pandemic, I have lost all perspective. I think I'm still doing a good job with safety measures, but then I suddenly feel a flood of anxiety. What would you say are the biggest mistakes people are making right now?
Well, I'll say to this person, if they are concerned about safety measures, chances are they're probably doing things just right. In public health, I think what we're concerned about most right now are people who really feel like things are over, that there's not a concern anymore, that they're not masking, they're not worried about social distancing and you know, being in crowds, just kind of taking it like this isn't a real issue and things are just fine. But if you are still washing your hands frequently, wearing a mask, socially distancing, all of those things, you're doing the right thing.
Okay. Let's move on to another question that came in about hospitalizations. Are they going up again? And who are the folks that are getting seriously ill and being hospitalized? And I know just today, as the numbers came out from your department, 4 deaths yesterday. So it's still happening. And the number of new infections was 2,553. And that's a lot for one day. But I wonder if you could talk about hospitalizations.
Yep. Well, just one thing I want to mention is that hospitalizations are considered a lagging indicator, as are deaths. And what that means is that it takes a while from when we start to see our case numbers really pick up until we start to see hospitalizations and deaths follow. So it's important to keep in mind that you don't see those two indicators immediately as case numbers go up. But the reason that our hospitalizations are going up again is because we are seeing case numbers go up, and we're seeing the impact of the variant circulating across the state. We know that the variant B117, that's the variant that was first seen in the UK, it probably makes up about 50 to 60% of all the cases in Minnesota. We know that that variant is much more readily transmissible, and it can be more severe. So the combination of variants circulating and then people dropping their guard and not following mitigation measures means that our case numbers are going up, and then as a result, hospitalizations are increasing. And when we look at the age of people being hospitalized, we see that that is dropping. So we're seeing more hospitalizations in people in their 40s through 60s. And so I think that's something to keep in mind. Our elder population is pretty well protected, and we are seeing hospitalizations in younger ages.
Okay, that is good to keep in mind. We heard from Rob this week. He wrote in, he said, my question is about false information. You might not want to repeat the worst stuff that you are hearing right now, but I'm wondering, what are some of the myths or the bad information that you see currently catching on? And of course, one of the main things is don't just go by what your neighbor tells you or what you see on social media without checking out what the source is. But I wonder if you can answer that question for him.
Yeah, well, right now I would say the biggest kind of misinformation that we're facing is that viewer perspective that the pandemic is over. You know, it's spring, we have more vaccines. We had a couple months ago, our case numbers were going down, so it must be okay to go back to normal. And I think that's kind of an important misinformation, since that's not really the case, and our increasing case numbers are really reflecting the impact of that thinking. But the other type of misinformation that we're really concerned about relates to vaccines. There's been a lot of misinformation about vaccines and various side effects, and so it's really important that if you want good information, if you have questions about vaccines and you want good information, you should go to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website or the Department of Health website. Go to a credible source for information, because, for instance, we've heard that there have been myths about, you know, deaths attributable to getting vaccinated, and there have been no deaths that have been attributable to vaccination across the country. So it's things like that kind of start circulating. And if you hear something like that, it's important that you check a reputable source.
Wow. Could you repeat that again so that we remember that there are no deaths?
There's no deaths attributable to being vaccinated.
Okay.
Certainly there are people who have been vaccinated who have died, after vaccination, but when they've been evaluated, you know, it is not attributable to the vaccination. You can imagine, just thinking about it from a practical standpoint, we first vaccinated our most vulnerable elder population, and we know that just in the course of life, that individuals who are in their 80s and 90s will at some point come to the end of their lives, regardless of whether or not they're vaccinated. But CDC is investigating every single report of someone who was vaccinated and then died following vaccination, and there have been no deaths attributable to vaccination.
Okay. Before we go, we heard from Mary this week, and she said, what did you think when you heard the CDC director's Rochelle Walensky's heartfelt plea for people to hang on and hold on? She said she is scared and that she is worried about another surge coming. She called it a sense of impending doom.
Well, you know, I think the epidemiologists on our team really resonated with that. We felt like that she was right. We're seeing cases increase around us. In particular, we've been following Michigan, which is a state that also has widespread circulation of B.1.1.7 like Minnesota, and seems to be a few weeks ahead of us. They hit 7,000 cases today.
Oh.
So we're concerned. You know, we're at a really serious point where we need to make sure that we're taking the precautions that are necessary so that the vaccines have a chance to win this race. And so, we want to make sure. I mean, we have the ability to control some of this. And so this idea of a fourth surge, that is possible. And if it comes, what would be sad is that we did have the ability to prevent it by the choices that we make. So I think it's good that she let people know that we aren't there yet. We've got to stick with it a little bit longer.
Right. And before we go, I know you've told us this before, but what should people be doing for Easter if they are vaccinated? What can they do this time?
So if you are vaccinated, you can gather with other family members who are fully vaccinated and be unmasked, or you could gather with one household that hasn't been vaccinated. So that could be grandparents that are vaccinated gathering with, you know, their grandkids with one household. And the only caveat there is you would not want to be unmasked if there is someone who's at very, very high risk for complications of COVID. But otherwise, yes, you could get together with family members.
Okay. Well, Chris, thank you for what you've been doing for the state of Minnesota, and I hope that you get a little downtime this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us today.
You.
That's Minnesota Department of Health Director Epidemiology Chris Ayersman. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state through AMPR's Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation, KAXE.org, or if you would like to ask a question for next week, send an email to COVID@AMPRS.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE KBXE. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.